Hello, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. I'm Nada Khan, and I'm one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for joining us here today to listen to this podcast. In today's episode, we talk to Dr. Lindsay Warwick-Giles, who is a research associate based within the Centre for Primary Care and Health Services Research at the University of Manchester. We're talking about the paper she's published alongside her colleagues titled, Can Primary Care Networks Contribute to the National Goal of Reducing Health Inequalities? So hi, Lindsay, and thanks for talking to me today about your recent research. I want to start here right at the basics, because you make the point in the paper that health inequalities can mean a number of things. What do you mean when you talk about health inequalities, and how do PCNs or primary care networks feed into these or try to fix them?
Thank you very much for having me. And I think it's fair to say that that is a really, really challenging question to answer. As a qualitative researcher, I've not gone into conducting fieldwork with a defined notion of what health inequalities are, because I think it's important to recognise that health inequalities are a wicked problem and they're what we would refer to as quite a slippery concept. So they mean so many different things to different people. When we're talking about inequalities, what does that mean to those people on the ground who are trying to implement the policy? We all use the term academics, clinicians, policymakers, and we all have an understanding of what that means to us individually, but that does not necessarily mean collectively we're all talking about the same thing. There's so many different factors that shape the understanding of the problem. And actually, when conducting research that's focusing on inequalities, I think it's really important to have that in your back of your mind, especially when you're doing policy research that isn't specifically focused on maybe a micro program that's trying to address, you know, a specific inequality, but thinking about inequalities as a collective.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. It's a complex term within a complex organization.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So talk me through what you aim to do here. And what you were doing was looking at primary care networks and health inequalities.
That's right. So in terms of this project, this was a large-scale national policy evaluation. So we were looking at the implementation of primary care networks. And with regards to this specific paper and this specific aspect of the project, what we wanted to do is we wanted to understand actually how PCNs were contributing to that national agenda of tackling inequalities. And the reason why we wanted to do that is because within the PCN policy itself, within the service specifications, there was a direct ask of primary care networks to address inequalities. But also when you look at the wider policy and health policy within England, there's a real push to tackle inequalities and actually the healthcare services contribution to do that. So from the introduction of the NHS long-term plan in 2019 and that recognition that healthcare needed to be involved. So what we wanted to do is, thinking at that macro level of the policy, was trying to understand what that actually meant on the ground for those forming. So it was very much early days of PCNs when we were conducting the research. So how they were coming together and how they were trying to respond to that contract, the primary care network DARES, and within that, how they were thinking about inequalities.
And we were discussing just briefly before I started recording that the methods were quite detailed because this is a mixed methods approach. But I wonder if you could give us just a brief overview of how you went about doing this.
And what we took two approaches in terms of collecting the data. So firstly, the quantitative component. So what we did is we wanted to understand the funding being allocated to primary care networks and how that in itself can shape how PCNs tackle inequalities. And my colleague and co-author, Joseph Hutchinson, he'd already published a paper in BJGP in 2021 looking at the allocation of funding to primary care networks and found that actually the contract was particularly pro-rich. So it was obviously money was going to more affluent practices. So what we wanted to do is, because of over the time of the project and the development of the PCN contract, is we wanted to see if the funding model had changed for primary care networks and how that impacted on health inequalities. Alongside that, we also wanted to run the qualitative component of the project, which was taking a case study approach. So we were conducting interviews and observations with seven PCNs across England, to try and explore what factors were shaping how they were trying to tackle inequalities at a local level, whilst also responding to the primary care network contract.
So all in all, you had a final sample of just over 1,200 primary care networks for the wider analysis, so quite a large sample, actually. And to start off with, what was the relationship between PCN funding and population deprivation?
So in the 2021 paper, Hutchinson et al. Found that actually that if deprived practices were losing out, almost they weren't receiving funding based on need. However, from this current analysis, what we found is that actually, as the PCN contract has developed over time, funding has become better at accounting for deprivation. So since the contract year 22-23, funding provides relatively more for deprived practices. So we could see that actually deprivation was being taken into account regarding funding. I think it's important to note that the analysis didn't take into account any of the incentive schemes, but in terms of that core contract allocation. So there has been quite a change in a positive way to help practices and PCNs serving more deprived communities.
And you mentioned just at the beginning of our chat that PCNs are meant to have these co-produced plans to tackle inequalities. How do the different PCNs feel about this and approach this?
It was quite varied, to be honest. And actually, there was some real concerns about almost the PCNs feeling quite daunted by the experience. So they were all taking different approaches. So they had, each PCN had to identify a health inequalities lead. The person who was undertaking that role was very varied in terms of obviously staff availability, capacity, and a willingness and an interest in terms of this type of agenda. The main concerns that our PCNs reported, or what we observed most definitely during meetings, was that actually, as clinicians, you are aware of the issues that your population face. You know the concerns within your community. However, a lot of those things that need to be done to address those problems that often bring patients into practice are beyond the remit of general practice or primary care. So in terms of, there was lots of discussion about maybe feeling quite overwhelmed with the ask being placed on general practice, and an acknowledgement that actually there was a real lack of levers or opportunities of which general practice had to really bring about change in this area. So it was very much small scale, focused on small pieces of work in terms of trying to respond to that service specification.
And one of the benefits that some people see of PCNs is the value of collaboration. And you describe in this paper collaboration as a way to reduce local inequalities. So what did different PCNs do to reduce these local inequalities through collaborating?
So I think it's really important to note when we're talking about primary care networks that we speak about them as if they are a thing that is the same. And actually, PCNs are really variable. That was a very strong finding from our overall project. And they're variable over multiple factors. So for example, their size, their scale, you know, the geographies in which they serve. So naturally, how they go about addressing inequalities will be different based on obviously how they're formed. So an example of where they were trying to tackle inequalities in one of our PCN sites is they had quite an interesting governance arrangement as a primary care network. So what they did is that when they were looking at the funding pot, is they were actually allocating more money to some of their more deprived practices to put in additional resources. So for example, if we're thinking about vaccinations in the COVID-19 pandemic, they were trying to encourage people within the community to, you know, reduce vaccine hesitancy. But I think when we're talking about how PCNs are tackling inequalities in the work that they've done, it's hard to scale up because it's very much specific on how a PCN has been formed, their history, relationships and governance models, because all of those things will shape how they work together, how decisions are made, and how they, you know, tackle or approach such things as health inequalities.
From the work that you've done in talking to people in different PCNs, did you find any models of good practice for how different practices worked better together within PCNs to help tackle inequalities? You've given an example, for instance, of practices distributing funding differently.
Yeah, and I think one of our sites felt really passionately that they'd actually employed a community link worker. And they thought that was a really good model for really thinking about inequalities. So rather than maybe taking a practice approach, it was someone who was very much embedded within that community, understood the community, and was also, you know, bringing those types of issues that maybe aren't necessarily seen in practice or understood it, the way in which they are within a community, back into the PCN so that they could design their services based around that.
And finally, what were the policy design factors that contributed to reducing inequalities?
The PCN policy itself was a one-size-fits-all kind of policy. So it, no matter where you were located, your population, demographic, all of those kinds of things, none of those things really were factored in with regards to what that means at implementation. So the PCN policy was designed, all practices signed up for it if they wanted to be, but the policy was the same for everybody. And that actually impacts on the implementation because it doesn't take into account the variation that I've already mentioned with regards to the different PCNs. So, for example, the policy doesn't take into account that actually there might already be existing programs of work that are at play trying to address inequalities. And it also didn't take into account that actually you're not serving the same population. So, for example, some of our PCNs said that actually you might have designed a new policy to get us to work collaboratively, but vaccination targets in the Impact and Investment Fund are still the same as what you've had for general practice in QOF and all of those kinds of things. And actually, we've not been capable of meeting those for 20 years because of the population that we're working with. So even though the policy's been designed in a way to encourage trying to, you know, focus on vaccinations and prevention, the root causes of the problem are still there, and the policy doesn't necessarily enable anything different to what's been going on historically.
Any other key findings that you want to highlight coming out of this paper?
For us, a key finding that we found really early on in the project was the importance for management support for PCNs. And that was prior. So we started this research prior to the introduction of the management support funding. But I think what we would argue is that actually PCNs and practices serving more deprived communities actually require additional management support, because some of the tasks, as I mentioned earlier, with regards to you're doing the same thing, but it takes a lot more effort when serving deprived communities. And then for me, as a non-clinician coming in as a policy researcher and with an interest in inequalities, I think it's really important for policymakers to really think about what they're asking PCNs to achieve. So when we're thinking about inequalities, we need to be realistic about what general practice can actually do with regards to tackle inequalities, because we know those defining factors that shape a person's health are often beyond the remit of general practice and primary care. So I think that needs to be accounted for when we're thinking about what general practice can do and outlining the work that's required.
So you've given a few ideas of things that could change in terms of how different PCNs are offered support or management support. But I wonder if you have any thoughts about what PCNs could be doing better to help tackle health inequalities. I know you've described that, you know, there's not going to be a one size fits all solution and that each PCN is working in a very different population and in a very different way. But do you have any ideas just in terms of overall messages for PCNs?
It is variable from practice to practice. So I think there's something about really understanding the population in which you serve beyond your practice. So thinking, at a larger scale. But I also think in terms of what general practice can be doing, we obviously know there's a real push on access and all of those kinds of policy initiatives. But in terms of the wider things. They are quite limited because of how general practice is funded. So to me, I suppose it's about what the ask is and how the policy and local organisations can support them and enable them to think about their population and maybe feeding into some more of those system-wide approaches to addressing inequality.
Spoken like a true health policy researcher, so thanks for that. But yeah, I think that's probably a really great place to wrap things up. So yeah, I just wanted to say thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me today.
No, thank you. It's been really nice to meet you.
And thank you all very much for your time here and for listening to this BJGP podcast. The original research article can be found on bjgp.org and the show notes and podcast audio can be found at bjgplife.com. It's been great to talk to Lindsay more about how PCN funding has impacted on health inequalities. And I think I'm going to go have some hot lemon for my breaking voice, so I do apologise for that today. Thanks again for listening, and bye!